Oft. A man got out of a sedan and stepped into the beams of his headlights.
Help me!
Mary yelled, glancing over her shoulder.
He's gonna kill me!
He closed the gap just as Mary reached her Good Samaritan. The man was tall and athletic-looking.
Is everything all right, deputy?
Just fine. I'm arresting this woman,
he said, cuffing Mary's arms behind her back.
No!
Mary struggled.
He's going to kill me. Please, help!
The man shifted his weight. Hell, even if the man left now, he was a risk, a witness. Thanks to Mary's outbursts, the man would remember her.
She's been drinking.
He took Mary by the arm and tugged her back.
You can get back in your car now, sir. I have everything under control.
The man pivoted slowly, uncertainly. When the man's back was turned, he pulled his baton off his duty belt and hit him over the head. The man's legs crumbled. He went down hard. Mary screamed again. He had to get her off this road.
Shut up!
Anger roared inside him as he knocked her to the ground and straddled her. With her hands cuffed behind her back, she couldn't resist. His fingers were around her throat. He squeezed until she was still and lifeless and fucking quiet. He stopped, panting. She was dead.
Fuck.
That hadn't been part of the plan. Her death should have looked like an accident. No chance of that with his finger marks around her neck. Now what? Now he had two more deaths to cover up, that's what. He'd have to improvise. He ran to the vehicle and opened the trunk. Hauling Mary off the pavement, he put her inside. Then he dragged the man to the back of the car and muscled him in too. Sliding behind the wheel, he opened the glove compartment and found the registration. Victor Krueger lived in Scarlet Falls. Correction. Had lived in Scarlet Falls. He needed a plan to get rid of both bodies and the car. The car he could sink in Gray Lake. If he put Victor at the wheel of his car, the deaths could look like a combination murder and suicide. But they would have no connection to one another. Murder-suicides were typically crimes of passion, born of the desperation that came from twisted love. If these bodies were ever discovered, what he needed was a way to make it appear as if Victor killed Mary and then left town. The car could go in the lake with Mary in the trunk. He'd bury Vic in the woods. He knew just the spot. When it was done, he'd call Owen for a pickup. Owen was an accessory. He'd keep his mouth shut. A twig cracked ahead, pulling his attention back to his task. Krueger and Dane must be just ahead. He slowed his pace, easing along the trail. The footprints muddied in the snow as if they'd stopped to rest. His gaze fell to the spot of blood in the snow ahead. He walked closer. They couldn't be far, not with one of them still bleeding. The footprints disappeared into the thick foliage of an evergreen tree. Could they be trying to hide? With slow and silent steps, he eased forward and separated the branches of the evergreen. She huddled on the ground, wet, cold, and scraggly as a lost kitten.
Ms. Dane. Nice to see you.
He gestured with the barrel of the rifle. Her hand was bloody. Ms. Dane lifted her hands. Her skin and lips were blue and she staggered as she tried to get to her feet. Even if he hadn't found her, she wouldn't have lasted much longer. She was running on pure determination, which he admitted she had in spades. It was a shame she had to die.
Where's Krueger?
He asked.
He went ahead for help.
She swayed on her feet.
I can't walk anymore.
Krueger would never leave her.
Liar.
King whipped the rifle around and smacked her in the face with the butt of the stock. She crumpled to the ground and lay in the snow, unmoving. He hadn't delivered a full-force blow. Hadn't meant to knock her out, only to stun her. But she was a more delicate creature than he was accustomed to handling. Whatever. At this point, he needed to be flexible and keep his eyes on the prize. Now he could use her as bait. He aimed the rifle at her face.
Come on out, Krueger. I know you can hear me. You have 3 seconds to show yourself before I pull the trigger.
Chapter 49. Heart hammering, Lance stared at the sheriff's back. Wavering, he hesitated for a fraction of a second. If he jumped the sheriff, King could shoot Morgan. But if he didn't, King would definitely shoot them both. He could not, under any circumstances, allow either of them to be taken prisoner by King. That would be the end. Surprise and the sheriff's own confidence would be Lance's best weapons. He took as deep a breath as his ribs would allow. Pushing off his good leg, he launched himself at the sheriff's back. He looped his cuffed hands over the sheriff's head. Pulling hard, he yanked the chain joining the cuffs into the sheriff's windpipe. The sheriff dropped the rifle. His hands went to his throat. He grabbed Lance's arms and tried to relieve the pressure. But Lance had the upper hand and he wasn't letting go. If this didn't work, he and Morgan were both dead. There would be no more running, no more game of cat and mouse. The mice didn't have any more chase left in them. The sheriff gagged, a sick, choking sound emanating from his throat as he fought to breathe. He thrashed, clawing at Lance's hands and using his size and weight to attempt to pull Lance off balance. King was large, strong and trained in defense and arrest tactics. He dropped one hand to his belt and freed a knife from its sheath. Reaching over his shoulder, King jabbed the point at Lance's head. Lance ducked his head out of the knife's path, but the effort cost him leverage. The sheriff grabbed Lance's wrist with his other hand, eased the pressure on his own throat, and heaved Lance forward with brute strength. King pinned Lance's wrist just below his own collarbone. Lance dropped his weight and fought to hold his position. The knife came at Lance's eye next. He shifted his head. His arms trembled. Agony seared through his ribcage. Exhausted, hypothermic, and injured, he was nearing his limit. It would be now or never.
"Last chance,"
he yelled in the sheriff's ear.
"Drop the knife."
King's answer was another sweeping arc of the blade toward Lance's face. Lance shifted away, fighting to maintain the hold on King's neck. If he had 2 good legs, he'd put a knee into the sheriff's back for leverage. But with his injuries, he was lucky to be standing. The knife swept toward his head again. He caught a flash of metal as the blade whispered past his eye, missing his eyeball by millimeters. His eyebrow stung where the sharp point nicked him. The sheriff grunted and pulled hard on Lance's wrist, attempting to give himself more breathing room. Lance planted his forearms on the sheriff's upper back and rolled his arms inward. If he could press on the side of the sheriff's neck, he could cut off the blood supply to his brain. But King wouldn't give up the leverage. With a grunt, the sheriff lowered the knife and stabbed under his own armpit, aiming at Lance's midsection. The blade kissed his belly with a flicker of heat. Lance opened his mouth to tell Morgan to run. He couldn't hold King much longer. He couldn't maneuver or gain leverage. But he didn't have any air to shout, either. Every ounce of remaining strength in his body pulled against the sheriff's neck. The pine trees around him spun. He couldn't breathe. Tiny stars rushed at his eyes and his vision began to tunnel. They weren't going to make it. The sheriff was a bull. Lance could hold on, but he couldn't finish him. A thud sounded next to Lance's ear, and the sheriff went limp. His body sagged and Lance saw Morgan standing behind him. The sheriff's AR-15 raised butt down over her shoulder. She'd knocked the sheriff out. It was over. Relief drained his adrenaline high, leaving him weak and shaky. Lance released his hold on the sheriff's neck. The weight of the falling body dragged him off balance and onto the ground. Lance fell sideways. His shoulder hit the snowy grass. He rolled over to his back. Snow fell on his face as he stared up at the dark sky and snowy treetops. At Morgan. She stood over the sheriff's prone body, the AR-15 in her hands pointed straight at King's head. Dark hair waved around her face, and snow whirled around her. In a moment of almost giddy lightheadedness, Lance imagined her as Wonder Woman. He blamed oxygen deprivation.
"Now what?"
Morgan shook. She looked like she could barely hold on to the rifle.
"Cover me. Shoot him if he moves a muscle."
Lance staggered to his feet. After testing the sheriff's consciousness with a solid kick, he took his weapon and searched his belt for a handcuff key. Finding it, Lance unlocked the cuffs on his wrists. Setting them aside, he worked the sheriff's coat off. Then he peeled off King's next two layers before rolling the sheriff to the base of a tree and cuffing his hands around the trunk. He collected the knife from where it had fallen and searched the rest of the sheriff's pockets. Lance brought Morgan the coat. After removing her handcuffs, he wrapped the heavy coat around her. She slipped her arms into the sleeves. Lance zipped it to her chin. Then he dressed in the sheriff's extra shirts, a thin base layer and a fleece zip-up. They were still warm from King's body, but Lance didn't care. Heat was heat. Setting the rifle aside, Morgan dug into the pockets of the sheriff's coat and started pulling out all the supplies a good woodsman packs when going into the forest. Protein bars, flashlight, compass, a reflective emergency blanket.
Matches and fire starter sticks. We can build a fire.
She also found a handgun that was not a police issue. She returned it to the pocket.
We'll fill this with snow and let it melt.
She shook an empty water bottle.
I don't want to spend the night out here,
Lance said. He wanted to get the hell out of the woods, but his ribs felt like he'd been run over by a car.
How far are we from the nearest building?
Morgan asked. Lance scanned the area.
I'm honestly not sure. It seems like we covered some ground, but I'm betting we didn't get that far. Could be a few miles.
We're both hypothermic and likely risking frostbite, Morgan said. Getting warm has to be our first priority. I vote for a makeshift shelter and a fire. Then we reassess our physical condition. Right at this moment, I wouldn't make it another mile.
Lance nodded. She was right. Breathing was becoming more painful. She glanced at the sheriff's prone body.
He'll freeze to death if we leave him there.
Probably.
Lance didn't care.
After everything he's done, he deserves to freeze to death.
That's exactly what King would say.
Damn. She was always right, but the moral high ground felt as attainable as Mount Everest.
Fine, but you get warm first.
Lance began looking for dry wood. Not an easy task in the snow when it felt like a truck was parked on his chest. But he scoured the underside of a fallen log for enough to get a flame going. Morgan, dwarfed in King's coat and gloves, brought some dryish sticks and pine needles to the spot under the fir tree, where they were sheltered from the worst of the snowfall. If Lance could get the fire going and eat a protein bar, maybe he'd find a way to pull a few branches over them for better protection from the elements. But Morgan was already on it.
I'm stealing your bootlaces.
She arced two branches over them, forming a fir tree lean-to that blocked the wind. She tied them in place with his laces. In 20 minutes, they had enough flames to warm their hands over. Lance added some twigs and coaxed the flames higher. Then he grudgingly spread the emergency blanket over the sheriff. Huddled around their tiny fire, they ate the sheriff's power bars and drank melted snow. Lance leaned back against the tree. Pain and exhaustion finally besting him, now that the acute danger had been neutralized. He balanced the AR-15 across his thighs, the muzzle aimed in the sheriff's direction. Morgan had King's service revolver in her hand, and the extra handgun in her pocket. She leaned on his shoulder. 20 feet outside their small shelter, the sheriff didn't move. The sound of a snapping twig startled Lance. Pain sliced through his ribs, stealing his breath. He must have fallen asleep. Something rustled the foliage, farther away this time. Lance lifted the rifle in his lap, scanning the clearing, looking for the sheriff. But another rustle in the distance told him King was running away. Next to him, Morgan came awake in an instant. She mouthed, "What is it?" He whispered,
"King is gone."
A little while later, voices floated through the trees from the direction opposite where King had run. 10 minutes passed before Mac and Sharp walked into the clearing in backpacks and hiking gear. Relief swept through Lance, warming him as much as the fire had.
Morgan stumbled to her feet and Matt caught her in a hug. Sharp dropped to one knee next to Lance.
Are you alive?
Yes.
Lance struggled to sit up. The sky was lighter. Was it close to dawn? How did you find us?
Hold on.
Let me give the rescue party our coordinates. Sharp spoke into his radio. After he lowered it, he jerked his thumb toward Mac.
That guy is freaky good in the woods. He tracks like one of the canines.
We didn't wait for the official rescue party to get it together, Mac said.
The two of us could move faster anyway.
Sharp set his backpack on the ground and opened it.
But they aren't far behind us. We'll have you both out of here in no time. Since you're not dying, we won't call for a helicopter. Mac is trying to figure out the closest spot we can rendezvous with a four-wheeler.
Lance straightened. Pain in his side nearly split him in half.
King got away. It must have been just before you arrived. He was handcuffed around that tree. I must have dozed off.
Lance wanted to kick himself.
Passed out is probably a more accurate description.
Sharp said.
You're in rough shape.
Mac was crouching where King's prone body should have been. Mac stood and scanned the ground.
He went north. We can catch him if we move now. I'm surprised you didn't kill him.
Sharp handed Lance a bag of trail mix. Lance ate a handful of raisins and nuts.
I wanted to.
And if he had, he wouldn't be worried about the sheriff getting away right now.
I'll bet you did.
Sharp handed him a bottle of water and patted his shoulder.
You did good. Everything's gonna be all right. We'll find him.
You'll wait for the police to catch him, right?
On the other side of the fire, Morgan sat on a rock. She smiled at him through the smoke.
Right.
Sharp grumbled. Lance leaned back against the tree. He knew who had killed his father, and the sheriff couldn't possibly get far. He and Morgan were alive and together. Everything would be all right, as long as he had her. Chapter 50. An hour later, Sharp hiked through the forest behind four state troopers. He could see why Mac Barrett was an asset to his search and rescue team. He loped along the trail in an effortless gait, tracking the sheriff like a frigging golden retriever. The trail led into a clearing. A cabin sat in the center of the open space. Fresh tracks in the snow led to the front door. King was inside. They all knew it. Tension connected the team members like an invisible current. The troopers fanned out, motioning for Sharp and Mac to fall behind them. Grudgingly, they did. But not far. One trooper scouted ahead. Crouching beneath a window, he took a selfie stick and his cell phone from his pocket. Raising the phone just above the windowsill, he used his camera to spy inside. He lowered the phone and crept back to the group.
He's standing in the middle of the room. He's armed and injured. Think we have any chance of talking him into laying down his weapon and coming outside?
The leader asked. All the men shared a "there's no way in hell that would ever happen" look.
Then let's go get him.
The leader motioned toward the cabin. The troopers flanked the entrance. With no warning knock, they breached the door, sweeping through the doorway. Boots thudded on wood as they shouted commands.
Police! Let me see your hands! Drop the weapon!
Sharp angled himself so he could see through the doorway. The sheriff stood in the center of the main room. His face was blotched. His nose was twice its normal size, and his eyes were bloodshot. In one hand, he pointed a handgun toward the floor. He cradled his other swollen hand against his body. King had dislocated his thumb to escape the handcuffs.
Crazy bastard. Put the weapon down, Sheriff.
The lead trooper ordered. They all knew King. They'd worked together. But they would still put a bullet in him to stop him if they had to. King looked beyond the cops to Sharp. Their eyes met. King's mouth curled into a snarl.
Put the weapon down or I will shoot you,
the trooper yelled. Sharp knew in that moment of eye contact that King would not let the troopers arrest him. Nor would he take the chance of a non-lethal bullet wound. he would never go to jail. In one swift movement, the sheriff brought the gun to his mouth and pulled the trigger, blowing off the back of his head. Blood and bits of brain splattered across the worn wood behind him. King went out on his own terms. Sharp didn't give a rat's ass how he went out, as long as he ended up 6 feet underground. Chapter 51. Late the next morning, Morgan sat in Lance's kitchen and drained her second cup of coffee. Lance was still asleep. He'd refused to stay at the hospital the night before. They'd returned to his house in the gray hours just before dawn, crawled into his bed and slept like corpses. The doorbell rang. Not wanting the noise to wake Lance, she hurried to the door and opened it. Mac and Stella stood on the front step with all three of Morgan's girls in tow.
"Where's Lance?"
Sophie tried to zoom past Morgan's legs. Morgan made a grab for her daughter.
"He's sleeping."
Sophie folded her arms and sulked.
"I want to see him."
"I know," Morgan said. "I'll go in and see if he's awake yet. Sharp is in the kitchen. We'll take the kids into the kitchen." Stella held up a box of donuts. "Who wants a donut?" "Save me one," Morgan said over her shoulder.
"Do you really deserve a donut?"
Stella asked. "If it were Christmas, I'd fill your stocking with coal for the stunt you pulled last night." Morgan and Lance had given their statements at the hospital the previous night. "I apologized 20 times already." Guilt poked Morgan. "I should have answered your call. I should have told you where we were going. I'm sorry." Stella humped.
"Maybe one donut."
She shook a finger at Morgan. "But you have to drink one of Sharp's nasty concoctions."
"I promise."
Morgan held up three fingers like a Girl Scout. Shaking her head, Stella retreated down the hall. Her sister loved her, no matter what. Morgan opened Lance's bedroom door.
"You don't have to be quiet," he said. "I'm awake."
His eyes were open. Shirtless, he pushed the sheet down to his waist. Purple bruises mottled his ribcage. A small bandage on his side and another on his elbow covered the shallow knife wounds he'd sustained in his fight with Sheriff King. Just looking at him bare-chested made Morgan shiver. She'd layered her silk-long underwear under a wool sweater. After their night in the woods, she might never be warm enough again. Morgan eased onto the side of the bed, taking care not to jostle him. "The kids are here. They were worried about you, so Stella and Mac brought them to visit. I hope that's all right."
"Of course it's okay."
Lance took her hand and traced the small bandage on her palm.
"I'm fine."
She shook her head. "You have 3 fractured ribs and 20 stitches in your leg. You should have stayed in the hospital last night."
"Observation is hospital code for waking you up every 30 minutes. I needed actual sleep, and it could have been worse."
He touched a tender spot on her temple where the butt end of King's rifle had left a bruise. "Unfortunately, I can't argue with that." They'd been very, very lucky. Lance put his palms on the bed and pushed his body toward the headboard. His face went tight with pain.
"You need a pill."
Morgan reached for a pillow and tucked it behind him. When he made a face, she said, "Remember what the doctor said? If you don't take the medication, you won't breathe deeply enough, and you'll be at risk for pneumonia."
"Yes, ma'am."
He eased onto the pillow, relaxing again once he was still. Morgan's own bruises were numerous, but just being alive and with Lance was enough to ease her stiffness. Every time she thought about what could have happened, her throat clogged and her heart clenched. She opened the prescription bottle and put 2 tablets in his hand, then handed him a glass of water on the nightstand. Morgan moved the medication to the top of his medicine cabinet, out of the reach of her kids. She moved the sheet and blanket aside to check the bandage on his calf. He wore just his boxers. More bruises had darkened over his body overnight. Angry, dark patches covered his torso and limbs like a purple camouflage print. The sheer number and expanse of them spoke volumes of how hard he'd fought to save them. The bedroom door opened and Sharp swept in, carrying a green shake.
"How are you?"
"How about a little privacy, Sharp?"
Lance pulled the sheet over his legs and tugged it to his waist. Sharp rolled his eyes, walked to the bedside and set the shake on the nightstand.
You need nutrients.
I just woke up.
Lance grumbled.
I made breakfast for you, too.
Sharp speared Morgan with a direct gaze.
Don't you dare dig into those donuts I saw in the kitchen. You're not in as serious condition as Lance, but your body has some repairs to make, too.
She sighed. She'd really been looking forward to one of those donuts and a vat of coffee. How's your arm? She asked Sharp.
Starting to heal. Thank you.
He handed Lance the shake with a short speech about vitamins, amino acids, protein, and anti-inflammatory compounds.
I believe you. I'm drinking.
Lance accepted the shake and took a long swallow.
What happened to your hand?
Sharp poked at a bandage on his finger.
I went to pick up that little dog at the vet this morning. She bit me. The vet said it seems the dog hates men.
Oh, no, Morgan said. I'll bet Warren Fox had something to do with that.
Speaking of Warren,
Sharp said.
He's fine. He was passed out drunk when you knocked on his door. He'd run his vehicle into a ditch a half mile from his house and stumbled home.
At least he isn't dead, Morgan said. What are we going to do with the dog? I can't have a dog that bites. I have three kids. But she'd never take the dog to the shelter.
No worries. I already found her home. I took her to Natalie Leeds' house. When I told Natalie the dog was homeless and hated men, she said that was perfect. So did she at the moment. It was love at first sight.
Sharp grinned.
Oh, and guess what Stan Adams has been hiding? A gambling problem. How do you know?
Lance raised the glass.
He was arrested this morning.
Sharp said.
That problem at his firm wasn't a request from a client, it was missing money. Stan has been borrowing from the firm to pay his debts. Apparently his partner has had him under investigation for a while. I wonder how long that's been going on, or whether it has anything to do with Stan's refusal to say where he really was the night my dad went missing.
Lance drank. Sharp shrugged.
I doubt he'll say now that he's lawyered up.
Watching Sharp fuss over Lance, Morgan turned toward the door. I'll get you an ice pack. Sophie bolted past. Morgan tried to grab her, but the child was wiry and quick. She launched herself onto the bed. She made no attempt to touch him, but the mattress rocked. Lance's face turned pale. Morgan hurried back to the bed, reaching for Sophie, but Lance shook his head.
I've got her.
He set the shake down and put both hands around Sophie's waist to stop her movements. Sophie's eyes widened as she stared at his bruised chest.
It looks worse than it is,
he said. It looks like it hurts. She leaned forward and kissed the darkest, largest bruise across his ribs. His face went whiter, and his eyes looked like they were going to roll back in his head as her lips touched the skin over his fractured bones. Sophie leaned back and folded her legs under her body with a little bounce. Oh, honey. Morgan winced. Lance needs to rest, don't... Lance held up a hand. Despite the paleness of his face, his eyes were misty.
She's fine. I need to get up anyway.
But you don't need to be catapulted to your feet, Morgan said. Sophie, did you get a donut? The little girl turned and frowned at Morgan. I want to stay with Lance.
How about I come into the kitchen?
Lance suggested. Sophie eyed his injuries with a dubious expression, as if she didn't believe he could or should be getting up. But she agreed.
Okay.
Sharp lifted her off the bed, clearly trying to stave off another trampoline session. He set her on the floor and she darted out of the room.
I'll go make some vegetable omelets,
Sharp said.
When you're up to it, Stella has business to discuss with you both.
Sharp had phoned to tell them about King's suicide while they were in the ER. Morgan had not been surprised. The only rules King had followed were his own. When they'd been discharged from the hospital, Morgan had stayed with Lance to keep an eye on him. He'd insisted he was all right, but she hadn't wanted him to be alone. They'd fallen asleep as soon as they'd gotten back to his house. Morgan had kept one hand on his body all night long, as if she needed to be continuously reassured that he was safe and whole.
Did the state police find anything at King's cabin?
By anything, Lance clearly meant remains. Sharp said,
The forensics team was still searching the cabin. In light of Vic's body still being missing, I suggested they bring in a cadaver dog. I'll bet your dad isn't far from the lake.
But they still didn't know why Vic had died. Would they ever? After all they'd been through, Lance and his mother deserved closure.
I want to go out there,
Lance said, obviously feeling the same way.
And I need to visit my mother.
They'd checked on her after he'd been discharged. She'd still been holding her own.
See how you feel standing up first, all right?
Sharp followed Sophie out of the room, pulling the door closed behind him. I'll get you some clothes. Morgan opened his dresser drawer and took out a pair of sweatpants and a t-shirt. She brought them to the bed. Lance was sitting up with his legs over the side. She knelt in front of him, sparing him the agony of bending in half to get his pants on.
I can dress myself.
Lance protested. I'm sorry about Sophie. I hope she didn't hurt you. Lance swallowed.
She didn't.
Liar. Morgan said.
Don't make me laugh.
He laughed, then put a hand over his ribs.
I'm flattered. In the beginning, I didn't think I'd be able to win her over.
Morgan pictured Sophie bouncing on the mattress. Be careful what you wish for. Chapter 52. The next day, Lance stood on the grass behind Sheriff King's small hunting cabin. Next to him, Morgan held his hand. The day was bright and clear. The sun shone on the water and warmed the top of his head. Having done her job and alerted within 30 minutes of being brought to the site, the cadaver dog sat on the sidelines while a state police forensic team dug careful shovelfuls of earth out from under the turf. The hole was 3 feet deep and they were still digging. Morgan had detoured to see the inside of the cabin. She hadn't seen the sheriff's body, but the bloodstain on the wall had been enough to convince her that the sheriff was dead. That it was all over. Well, almost. They still didn't know where Vic was or why he'd been killed. Morgan shivered and zipped her parka to her chin. Stella and Brody walked across the grass to join them. Brody stared out over the lake.
How typical of King. To off himself and leave us totally in the dark. No note, no explanation, no nothing. I never would have guessed King was behind everything,
Lance said.
But when I think about it now, it makes complete sense. He had access to all the witnesses. He only killed those who could connect him with Mary. I have to assume Crystal was the person Mary called from the police station that night, so she knew Mary had been arrested.
And PJ knew King had arrested Mary, too, Stella said. We arranged for a local detective in Florida to interview Owen Walsh. When he arrived, a PI was in the room. Sharp's associate. The PI had already convinced Owen to talk. Lance stiffened. His ribs ached. The last missing piece of his puzzle was about to fall into place. Owen is dying of stomach cancer. He seemed relieved to confess. Stella turned to Lance. Owen confirmed the story the janitor told Sharp about Owen and King beating Lou Ford. Ford died in the back of the sheriff's station. She took a breath, giving Lance a second to brace himself. This part of the story is secondhand. King told Owen what happened when he called from Gray Lake, asking Owen to pick him up. King drove Mary out to a rest stop in Scarlet Falls to kill her. But she got away from him. Your dad was driving along the road, saw the girl running, and stopped to help. King killed him, buried him here, then sank the car in the lake with Mary in the trunk. He called Owen to pick him up on the road near Gray Lake, and Owen drove him back to his car at the rest stop. So simple. Just a few sentences summed up his father's death. It didn't seem right. But all of the pieces fell into place perfectly. Disbelief and anger did a slow tumble through Lance's belly. They'd interacted with the sheriff on several cases over the past few months. King had faced Lance over and over with no sign of guilt.
What kind of man could do that?
A psychopath. No empathy, no remorse. King hadn't shown any guilt because he hadn't felt any. Lance glanced out over the glittering surface of the lake. He was finally getting the closure he'd wanted for decades. But now that he had it, he couldn't seem to process it. He pressed his arm against Morgan's. He had time. And he had her. The rest would work itself out. Stella turned to Morgan.
You know Tyler Green was never your stalker, right?
Yes, Morgan said. He was in jail when the photos were left on our neighbor's porch.
He'll never guess what we found in King's cabin. A canister of hornet foam spray and an empty gallon container of beef blood. The sheriff made his own blood bait for catfishing. He had a freezer full of it.
Stella shook her head. Why would the sheriff slit your tires and pour blood in your car?
Lance asked.
Other than the general knowledge that he was a cold-blooded killer, everything else that he did had a specific reason. But those acts seemed just plain nasty. Almost vengeful.
Morgan's face went grim. I can only think of one reason. He was angry that I told the DA he coerced a false confession out of Eric.
His ego couldn't take having a woman rat him out, Lance said.
Morgan shook her head. Yet he always seemed to almost like me.
Lance sighed. King was clearly a psychopath. They mimic the emotions of others. They are very manipulative, charming, even.
He thought of the sheriff's polite act with his mother.
He was displaying the behavior he thought would make him blend in better.
That's exactly how Ted Bundy convinced young women to trust him. Morgan agreed. There's more, Stella said. The hospital security tape shows a big man in jeans and a baseball cap outside your mother's room, Lance. He kept his face shadowed or turned away from the camera. But it could have been him. And the night she was poisoned in the ICU, we have a video of someone we believe is him disguised as a janitor. He went into the room next to your mom's and waited for the old man to code. Then, during the commotion, it appears that he injected something into the bag of saline outside your mom's room. He'd been researching your mother's medication on his home computer. He had access to confiscated heroin and guns. The police and forensics units had been busy. But then the SFPD, the state police, and the county resources had all been on the job.
He planned everything.
Lance felt numb. How could someone kill so many people just to cover up one mistake? Psychopaths only think of their own needs and how to manipulate others to attain them.
We found something!
One of the forensic techs yelled. Lance moved toward the hole, but Morgan held him back with a hand on his elbow. Let Stella and Brody go first, she said. You might not want to see. He smiled at her.
I need to see this the same way you needed to see the inside of King's cabin.
Her grip on his arm tightened. It's a skull! Someone shouted. Lance took one look in the gravesite. The skull stared back at him from the dirt. Grief flooded him. That was his dad, in the bottom of that hole. Even from outside the grave, Lance could see the fissure over the brow ridge. Blunt force trauma. King's baton? Lance swallowed hard, stood back, and let the team work. He'd waited 23 years. What was another couple of hours? Let's sit down. Morgan tugged him toward a carved-out log bench facing the water. He let her guide him to the seat. But he didn't have to wait that long. An hour later, Stella walked over with a clear plastic evidence bag. Inside was a man's silver wedding ring. Stella pointed to the inside of the band. Jenny and Vic forever.
Thanks,
Lance said, his voice hoarse. Stella returned the ring to the forensic team, then walked back toward Morgan and Lance. The official identification would take time, but Lance knew this was it. He'd found his father. Vic Krueger hadn't abandoned his family, he'd stopped to help a woman in distress, and he'd been killed for it. His mother had been right all along. His father had been a good man. Emotions crowded Lance's chest. Too many to sort through all at once. His next breath dragged in and out of his lungs, making his ribs ache through the pain medicine. How are you? Morgan took his hand. She was wearing thick gloves, but the grasp of her hand grounded him.
Okay. I knew, as soon as we got here, that this would be the place.
He turned away from the rippling water. Morgan's big blue eyes were filled with concern. Are you all right?
I am.
Under the sadness lurching through his heart, there was a new stillness, as if he was on a turbulent flight that suddenly smoothed out. Morgan tightened her grip on his hand.
I have to go see my mother now,
he said. Jenny had woken that morning, groggy, out of sorts, and terrified at being in the hospital. But Lance had gone to the ICU and she'd calmed down. She was going to be all right, at least physically. Who knew what kind of mental scars the incident would leave? But if there was one thing Lance was learning, it was to handle one disaster at a time. She was going to live. They'd deal with the fallout later. I'll go with you. Morgan stood. I know you're worried about bringing her home, but I want you to accept that I'm here to help. I love your mom.
Thank you.
It's what family does. He didn't argue. He wanted her with him. Why he'd ever thought differently was a mystery to him now. Brody and I would like to tag along, Stella said. We need your mother to answer some questions if she's up to it.
I don't know how coherent or cooperative she'll be,
Lance warned, heading toward the Jeep. Understood. You tell us what she can tolerate. Stella waved for Brody and he strode across the grass toward them.
This scene belongs to the state police. They don't need us here. I want to stop at my mom's house and pick up her computer,
Lance said to Morgan.
She'll feel better if she has something to do.
They left the crime scene, stopped at Jenny's, and then drove to the hospital. To Lance's surprise, his mother was out of the ICU and in a regular room. Lance walked in first, with Morgan right behind him. She sat up and reached her hand out for his. Taking it, he sat on the edge of the bed. Morgan stood beside him. His mom squinted at him. Her eyes were a little bit fuzzy.
What happened to your face?
She obviously didn't remember him stopping by that morning. Her voice slurred as if she were mildly sedated. Probably for the best. She'd experienced enough stress to freak out the most stable person.
It's just a few scratches.
But I have some news for you. He told her the basics of what happened with the sheriff, leaving out the details of King's attempt to kill him and Morgan. She didn't need to know everything.
They found Dad.
Lance told her what they'd found at the sheriff's cabin. When he'd finished his story, she seemed relieved.
I knew it. I knew he didn't leave us.
You were right.
His mom sniffed.
Now, we can put him to rest properly.
And carry his memory untainted. Until this moment, Lance hadn't realized how important it was that his father's name be cleared.
How are you doing here?
Lance asked. His mother's eyes filled with tears.
I want to go home. The doctor thinks I can go home tomorrow or the next day.
She licked her lips.
I don't like being here. I want to go home today.
I know.
Lance patted her forearm.
Are you up to answering a few questions from the police?
I don't know.
His mom pulled her hand away and picked at a cuticle. Lance took her hand back, holding it firmly between his own palms.
It's all right if you're not ready. The man responsible is dead. Cleaning up the loose ends of the investigation can wait.
I can try.
She struggled to sit up.
Would you hand me my water?
Sure.
Lance raised the head of the bed and lifted the water cup to his mother's lips. Then he nodded to Morgan, who went out into the hall, returning a minute later with Stella. Brody hung by the doorway within earshot but not crowding Lance's mother. Morgan introduced her sister.
Who visited you the day you got sick?
Stella asked.
Sheriff King came to ask me more questions about Vic's disappearance.
Jenny said.
He brought pie,
but it wasn't very good. When he went to the bathroom, I scraped most of it into the trash. I didn't want to insult him, so I left a few bites to finish when he came out. The fact that she'd only eaten a few bites had saved her life. He used the bathroom twice in 30 minutes. I thought maybe he was having prostate problems. I had no idea. His mother shivered. He must have gone into the bathroom to steal her medication, then again to leave the pill vials in the sink and set the stage for her fake suicide attempt.
None of us did.
Lance still couldn't wrap his head around the truth. Do you have any idea why Sheriff King might have tried to poison you? Stella asked.
No.
His mother shook her head. But I do remember where I'd seen him before. It wasn't just on TV. Of course, he looked different. He was much younger back then, which is why I didn't remember him right away when he came into my house the first time. He was on duty the night Vic went missing. I remember driving past a rest stop when I was out looking for Vic. There were two sheriff's cars in the lot. I stopped to ask them if they'd seen a Buick Century. Lance and Morgan shared a glance, and the very last piece of the puzzle fell into place.
Mom, did you mention this to Sheriff King when he came alone to question you?
Lance asked. She nodded. I did. He said something about it being a small world. And he'd tried to kill her before she could give him away. Stella asked a few more questions, then bowed out. Is it okay if I contact you again, Mrs. Kruger? You answered our big question, but I'm sure we'll have details to iron out as we wrap up the investigation. His mom nodded. I suppose that would be all right. Thank you for your help today. Stella said goodbye and she and Brody left. His mom released their hands.
You both look terrible. You should go home and get some rest.
Would you like to have a video call with Kevin?
Lance asked. His mother lifted her chin. Her eyes brightened.
I would love that.
Lance connected her laptop to the hospital's Wi-Fi network. Morgan rolled the bedside table over to the bed. A few minutes later, Kevin's face appeared on the screen. Jenny smiled.
We'll leave you two to talk.
Lance kissed her on the cheek.
I love you, Mom.
Love you, too.
She smiled at Morgan.
Take care of each other.
We will.
Lance followed Morgan out of the room. That's exactly what they did best. Lance stood on the sidelines of the ice arena and watched Eric send a hockey puck into the goal. The buzzer rang and the small crowd cheered. Next to him, Morgan clapped her hands around Sophie, who sat on her mother's hip. Ava and Mia stood on the bench so they could see over the wall.
Did we win?
Sophie kicked Morgan's sides as if she was riding a pony.
Yes, we won.
Morgan pointed to the scoreboard. The blinking number 4 is Lance's team.
Yay!
Sophie squealed. The team skated by Lance, pulling off their gloves and high-fiving him as they zoomed past. By the time the last member had slapped his hand, Lance was holding his ribs.
Lance promised to take us on the ice after the game.
Sophie squirmed. Aw, honey. Morgan hugged her daughter. Lance isn't quite up to that yet.
I can manage,
Lance said, looking mildly offended. Morgan gave him a look. The doctor said your ribs would take 6 weeks to heal. It's been 2 days. You shouldn't even be here.
I wasn't missing this game.
Lance had neglected the kids on his hockey team enough. After finally learning the truth about his dad, Lance was ready to live. Really live. One selfish man had changed the course of his life. Lance had lost an entire future with his dad. He'd spent 23 years mired in the fallout. 2 decades of pain, of doubt, of just being happy to get through the day. But now that was over. He realized that life was too precious to waste a minute of it. He had a second chance at happiness with Morgan and her girls. He was grabbing it with both hands and holding on. No more being satisfied with the bare minimum life had to offer. He had a whole future out there. And it was bright, and shiny and new.
I'll take her.
Eric handed his gloves and helmet over the wall to Lance and held his hands up.
Please?
Sophie begged. All right. Morgan carried Sophie to the opening that led onto the ice. Ava and Mia hovered close behind her. The rest of the team crowded around the girls. Eric took Sophie's hands and let her shuffle across the ice in front of him. The only girl on Lance's team, Jamie, offered Ava and Mia her hands.
Not too fast, Morgan called out.
They'll be fine.
Lance leaned on the wall next to her.
They're barely moving.
I know.
But she would still worry. How do you feel?
Very happy to be alive.
He kissed her temple.
And very happy to have you.
Are you sure you'll be all right by yourself tonight? She asked. She'd stayed at his house the night before.
Yes,
he said.
Though I'm tempted to say no, just so you'll spend the night with me.
She turned. The girls would be all right with me staying over to take care of you. They were all worried. You're lucky Sophie isn't here playing doctor. Lance laughed. Pain encircled his ribs. He put a hand on his side.
Her bedside manner needs work.
Morgan checked her phone. We should go soon. The girls will be hungry. Come for dinner?
I'd like that.
My girls love you.
I know.
He turned.
I was worried about that for a while.
Worried?
A relationship with your kids is a whole different kind of responsibility. I didn't want to disappoint them if my taking care of my mother got in the way. Your girls deserve better.
You would never do that. Morgan took his face in her hands. She kissed his cheek. And I would never be with a man who wasn't good for my girls. I love that you were worried about them. You are a good man, Lance Krueger. I love you. And my kids love you. I'm afraid there's nothing you can do about that. You're stuck with all of us, the whole crazy, chaotic bunch. He pulled her mouth to his.
I was an idiot to resist.
Resistance is futile, she said against his mouth. He kissed her.
In that case, I surrender.
And he did. Heart and soul. We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of Bones Don't Lie by Melinda Lee, performed by Chris Dukart, engineered by Ryan May. Performance copyright 2017 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc., all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.